Hey there, this is Seth Wars from Channel 9 coming to you from our beautiful studio. I have some special guests to talk about some interesting, and I say in quotes, things. Yeah. Right? So why don't you introduce yourselves and tell us who you are, what you do.
I'm Taki Jaffrey. I work on the Windows platform.
Fantastic.
And I'm Jean-Paoli, and I work also on the Windows platform.
So the reason why I put things in quotes is because you were going to help us sort of understand a little bit more about the Internet of Things. So what is the Internet of Things? Let's just start with that to sort of frame this conversation. Who wants to take that one?
Well, you walk around your house, you walk around the hardware aisle in any big box store, mm-hmm. you find smart variations of everything. So everything from light bulbs, temperature sensors, window shades. And as the world around us becomes smarter, all these things that were traditionally inanimate, they become smarter, more connected, more in tune with what we're doing. That's the Internet of Things.
And that's, okay, so I'm a programmer, right? And we're talking to programmers. All of a sudden, the Internet of Things becomes this huge amount. How many different things are we talking about?
So that's the thing is, You have many light bulbs. You have one here on the table. There are many other. We really believe that end users and developers can access in a very consistent way similar things, like mm-hmm. similar lamps or similar thermostats, while accessing still the unique functionalities of every device.
And I'm thinking of that, but I can go home right now on my Raspberry Pi and make a thing that has nothing to do with a light bulb. I'm as a developer, I'm going to have to expose some kind of API, right? Does that cause a problem with the amount of APIs that are going to be exploding all over the place?
Right, exactly. So, everybody talks about light bulbs, but it's great that you brought up Raspberry Pi. You could create your own category of thing, and then you have the problem of how do you expose that to developers. Mm-hmm. And as long as you are a category of one, that crazy robot with spinning arms that you created is the only one that exists, well, that's okay because people can use your API. But the moment you start defining a category, like now you're talking about automotive or window shades or something like that, well, then you have this problem that Jean was talking about, that you need a consistent way for app developers who don't want to deal with the complexity of all of these devices out there, for app developers to just call one API and then something to magically abstract that complexity away from the app developer, that in reality there's many, many things in this one category.
So as a developer, right, as soon as I hear the, we want to make it easy to use and magic, right, my bit flips, someone's selling something to me. How do you access all of these common, non-common things in a common way?
So why don't you show some examples of thermostats?
Okay, I think I can do that. On screen we have the blog post mm-hmm. I think it went live last week.
Yes.
And in the description, we'll put a link to this as well. And you guys can go check it out. But one of the things we talk about is in the, just to take example of temperature sensors right here.
Okay.
There are three different temperature sensors which have three different ways of reading something as simple as temperature.
Okay.
And it's not just an API difference, which by the way exists there as well, but everything from normalizing the values that are returned and
right.
so forth. And if you as an app developer want to write an app that reads temperature, today you need to do all this work yourself in your application, and that's just for three temperature sensors.
And then what if someone makes a better temperature sensor that
exactly.
takes the log reading of something instead of the regular reading because they
exactly.
want to take wider... it still feels like it's a lot of a problem for me, right?
Exactly. And then also for light bulbs, which is another example in our blog post, here are two examples of light bulbs, which are popular ones, which have as far as REST APIs are concerned, two different REST APIs. Mm-hmm. And if you guys stick around, we'll talk about a Bluetooth light bulb as well. We'll actually show a demo of it later. And that's a completely different API, obviously, it's not REST. But the point, as we were mentioning earlier, is as an app developer, you just want to turn a light on and off.
Right.
You don't want to have to pick which light you turn on and off. You just want to turn any light on or off.
So how do you go about solving this problem? You sort of hinted at it with sort of categorizing things, but it feels like it needs to be more succinct than that.
So I think the way we are proposing to solve the issue, and that's the project that we announced last week, is divided in three pieces. We
okay.
believe there are three pieces.
So what's the name of the project, first of all, before we
it's
start?
It's Open Translator to Things.
Open Translator to Things.
It's an open source project, so that's why it's open, and it translates to things, which I'm going to say what it is. So we think that there are three pieces. The first piece is what we call a schema. And so think about it as a common object model.
Okay.
So we have on and off and dim the light for lamps, for example. So that's the schema. Many people in the industry are creating those schemas. You know, for example, the Open Connectivity Foundation, OCF, has a very good tool called One IoTA, and they go and crowdsource how to create such schemas. So there are many efforts. Now, complementary to the schema, which is very important, which is not the core of this project, you need to write what we think are translators, which are very small pieces of code that connect a schema or translate a schema to the actual thing. So it uses the protocol, for example, Bluetooth. If it's a Bluetooth thing, it can use a REST HTTP for another lamp, but it's the job of a translator to translate between a specific schema and one lamp, and then another translator from the same schema to another lamp.
I see. So what you're doing then is, are you defining schemas for particular categories of things, like light bulbs, or by functionality of things?
Actually, we are not defining, our goal is not to define schemas. The industry is going to define schemas. What we are providing is a place on GitHub where developers can actually write translators.
I see.
And so you have three things. You have somebody writing schemas, just not us. Is the industry.
Uh-huh.
They can go decide if a light bulb has three parameters or two, whatever.
Love
the
it.
Most important is it's an open source project. You can write translators, and I will show you a lot of those. And then there's a third part, which is the app part that Taku has been talking about.
Right, and we'll show you some sample apps later as well. But that's the part he was talking about, where once you have all these translators, you have all these schemas. The important part is, okay, now app developers, what kind of what's that single API that's exposed to them? And how do they talk to that single schema to, again, for example, turn light bulbs on or off?
I see.
But it's not just about light bulbs, obviously. It's about anything which fits within a category.
So you talked about three things. You talked about schemas, you talked about translators, and you talked about apps.
Yes.
So what would these schemas sort of look like? How would they describe these things?
Actually, let me show you a little bit.
Okay.
Let me show you. This is the GitHub project that we started. It's alpha code. So, we want people in the community to come and help. Please help us make it a beta. And there are a lot of things to do. So I'm going to show you a little bit, the repos. The first one here is, OpenT2T GitHub.io. That's simply our website that you were seeing before. The most important, though, is that there is an issue list into this website, and that's where we encourage the community to basically talk about the project in general.
I think what's cool is you were very quick to say we are not defining schemas.
No,
we are providing a sort of playground where people can put their schemas and their translators so that people can build apps.
Actually, exactly. Let me show you the second tier repo. I agree with you. It's called literally the translator repo. So if I click on it here, what we wrote is three, you have here three folders, and we just call them by the name of the schema. Just to make fun, we called the first one sample super popular lamp. We know nobody's going to use it. It's just a sample, it's just a little bit fun. And so we wrote one for shades, one for temperature. It's simply a playground to kind of so people can test. And when I show you what we put into the super popular lamp, the first thing you see is an XML file here. That's actually the schema.
And that's the schema from this particular kind of lamp.
So we actually wrote it because we are just testing. This is development code, and that nobody will use that. It's just a nice example. That particular schema defines that a lamp has a turn on, turn off, and then a set brightness method that has an argument called brightness. It's as simple as that. That particular XML format has been defined into a standard body, so we did not invent it. We're just taking an example to write it.
And so the schema sort of defines the functionality that is available for this type of light.
Right, but to answer your question, the schema is one view of what any light bulb would be like.
I see.
And
yes.
Then you write a bunch of translators, and in our translators repo, we have, I think, four or five right now, how do you connect that notion of a standard light bulb, if you will, when I call the on-off on the schema, then that gets translated to the on-off command
Let me actually show you.
Right.
And so here, I showed you this the schema here. Mm-hmm. And here, for example, we have examples of translator we wrote for multiple different kind of lamps. So for example, I'm going to show you two translators, one for the Wink light bulb and one for the Philips Hue. So let's start with the Wink one. You click here, And there is a thingstranslator.js that is written here. So let me show it to you. When you go at the end, you see three function calls, turn on, turn off, send brightness.
Even with the parameters as well.
With exactly the parameters. And that basically has been implemented as a bunch of JavaScript, push JSON, and HTTP just for that wink light bulb. You know, it's implemented at the very beginning, and you can see here, you know, the piece of HTTP and JSON that it sends. But that's what Wink wants, right?
I see.
Now, if I go back and I show you the one that we wrote for Philips Hue, right? Just, and I open the thingtranslator.js here. Same thing, I go to the end, and it defines the three functions. Same one, turn on, turn off, set brightness.
I see. And see, this same. Is interesting because it feels like with this particular approach, you're not just empowering the developer, but you're empowering the manufacturer, right? Because the manufacturer could define a schema, the developer might be on a wink, or the developer might say, hey, I have this program that I've made. If you want to support this program, you have to use a translator for the schema.
That's right.
So it's kind of cool that both ends now are empowered.
Both ends can do it. You right. know, some manufacturer, we have a lot of existing manufacturers with existing things, they support different protocols.
Right.
So you can, after the fact, 6 months after a thing is released in the market, you have an open source community and go create a schema, and then they start mapping a lot of things to a specific schema, and then all of a sudden you have a lot of translators, a lot of actual hardware that talks the same schema. It can be done after the fact. That doesn't have to be before the fact. You don't have to need the schema before the fact, before manufacturing mm-hmm. the light bulbs.
Absolutely. Right.
And then, you know, you said we are empowering developers and device manufacturers. Both is true. But you're also empowering users. And again, foreshadowing the demo that I'll show, mm-hmm. As a user, let's say you're using a voice agent and you want to say, hey, turn on the lights. You don't want to say, hey, turn on the Philips Hue light.
Right.
Or, hey, turn on the so-and-so light. You just want to say, hey, turn on the light. And that's the power of the schema, where you just say light, but the translator for that schema translates to the particular model of light that you have.
And you can imagine sort of a new thing that could be invented, thing foo, where they define this schema and foo becomes so popular that everyone makes a foo, but all of the programs that work with foo will now work with the new kinds of foo
Absolutely.
If they follow that schema.
Absolutely.
That's right. And so here, let me just go quickly show you what is in the repo, in the project. So you know, once you basically defined all of those, imagine you have a lot of translators. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, you can first go and start using this. For example, here we have a cloud folder.
Uh-huh.
And in the cloud folder is just a node. It's basically some common code for any, you can run it on any node install. You can run it on the cloud, you can run it on a gateway. Mm-hmm. And that basically runs, so for example, you can run it on Azure, on AWS, on Google. And so it's just JavaScript, and it uses cross-platform, JavaScript libraries from a protocol point of view, so you can run it anywhere you want on the cloud. And also what we did is we created a set of sample apps here, and that sample apps shows you how you can use it, for example, also on the client. We gave examples of Hello World on UWP, on Android. Mm-hmm. The way you run it on a client could be a little bit different than on the server. If you choose so, we created here a repo called the console, which is a console app that actually hosts Node on a client. And all of a sudden, if you are on a Windows or in an Orion machine or something like this, those things will show up on the bus. And if you have, for example, 5 light bulbs that comes from different manufacturer, different protocol, they all will show up in the same way on the same bus.
Interesting.
And you can all of a sudden start accessing, and you create one, Windows app or Android app that asks for one call, turn on the light, and it can actually turn on the light for all these different lamps.
And that's interesting because I think I forgot, I mean, and maybe you, as you were watching, forgot this too, but when you're writing this kind of code, there's code that works here near the device and things that work near the client, and you're looking at both perspectives at the same time.
Absolutely. It's an open source, it runs on, it's JavaScript and it's cross-platform. So you can run it on any PC or Android or things like this, or you can run it on any cloud, literally, if you want to do the translation on the cloud, or for many things that when you have gateways, you know, in industry, for example, in factories, you have some devices that are connected to a gateway. So you can put the translation on the gateway, and then you only marshal the calls to the cloud in order to do calls.
Right. That's fantastic.
That's the power of the Node ecosystem, right? That's really, you know, there's tons of momentum behind Node. That's what we're using, just cross-platform Node. That's what all our translators are written in.
Cool.
And we were actually joking earlier, the demo that I'm going to show you is obviously on my PC, my Windows 10 PC, but we could have easily done that on a Mac as well. And in fact, if you go to our website, our Getting Started guide, some of those videos are actually shot on a Mac. But that's just, you know, the client-side stuff that we're going to show you. Part of the demo is going to be, I'm going to show you some Bluetooth stuff as well. But because it's just Node, if you're just calling an HTTP API, for example, in the case of Wink or Philips Hue,
okay.
Well, then you can run it in the cloud. And that's pretty powerful because the cloud is always available.
Sure.
So if you want to do something like, you know, you walk in and your lights turn on, or hey, you're leaving the airport and you forgot to turn the lights off, you want to turn it off in the airport.
Send something up and it comes.
Exactly.
In. That's awesome.
So that's the, and it's the exact same translator.
Yeah.
That runs either on the client or the cloud because it's just JavaScript.
I love it. So I feel like we've talked about this enough. Let's get into how the developer is going to sort of get a feel for this.
Wonderful. So Jean already showed you, you know, our GitHub repo. Again, to plug it, it's github.com/openttt. We'll put the link in the description. What I have here is in my IDE, this is the translator's repo. So this
sure.
is the root of the translator's repo that you're looking at. And Jean already showed you, but this is the schema that he already showed you in GitHub. And again, he also showed you this Wink light bulb schema. This is the thing translator that he
yes,
showed
but
you.
Now in dark theme. So it's
exactly. Now it's in dark theme, so it's a little bit developer focused.
That's right.
So what you're looking at over here is this is the specific kind of REST call that is made. I showed you this in the blog post as well. Mm-hmm. And if you just want to run it, this is the console project that John was talking about.
Okay.
Where what you do is you run the console project. This is just for developers, and this allows you to browse all the translators that are currently in our Git repo. Uh-huh. So this is literally just browsing the Git repo live, and you can go in here and, you know, these are all the translators. You can click on the Wink light bulb. I already did that. I'm gonna, you know, save you from watching me type in my password.
Right.
Once you set it up, that this is the translator that's running.
And so if you make another one, it'll just show
exactly.
up.
Exactly. These will just show up. But, you know, for the sake of brevity, I just have one.
Sure.
And if you look over there to your left, that's my demo setup. That's a Wink hub.
Okay.
And then connected to that is a GE Link light bulb. That's what's showing up on my screen right now.
Okay.
It's connected via the Wink hub, and the hub kind of is transparent, right? The hub is just how you connect to things.
Sure.
It just exposes a REST API endpoint for a lot of things which are proximal. Like that's a, you know, ZigBee-based bulb, I believe.
Sure.
So, you know, without further ado, like Jean was mentioning, now that I've set up this translator, this translator is running on my my local machine. But again, like I said, it could just as easy run in the cloud.
Got
it's
it.
Just Node. You can mm-hmm. go inspect that. I can turn on, for people who are familiar with AllJoin, sorry, let me back out of here. For those who are familiar with AllJoin, what happens is these are all the devices available on the AllJoin bus.
Okay.
So these typically are devices like directly connected or like on the AllJoin network. But what's happened here, now that I'm running this translator, is this device is showing up as a kind of a virtual AllJoin device.
Got it. So for those that don't know what AllJoin mm-hmm. is, can you sort of give you a brief sort of overview?
Right. So it's, you know, you want to take this one?
Sure. It is a standard that has been, done in the AllJoin Scene Alliance, and now we're working a lot with OCF as well. And it has been shipping in Windows 10 and on there are, since Windows 10, there are implementations for Android and for many other. Yeah.
That's awesome. So it's just a way to see what you can do with IoT. It's like a way to explore what's out there
That's
on
right.
your
exactly.
network or whatever.
But you know, typically AllJoin, some readers are familiar with AllJoin might be familiar. It's just about, you know, things which are AllJoin natively.
Right.
Things which are exposing AllJoin.
Mm-hmm.
But what you've just saw me do is that light bulb does not expose AllJoin. That light bulb doesn't know anything about AllJoin, but we've bridged it. Essentially,
with the translator
to run on AllJoin.
That's awesome.
And you know, in the future, this we could do this to any different bus or any different protocol. AllJoin is just because it's built into Windows 10. That's what we started with.
Got it.
And for example, on the cloud, you don't need AllJoin.
No.
You're directly using the JavaScript.
Right. So you know, but the important thing is this GE Link light bulb is exposing that super popular lamp interface mm-hmm. that you saw earlier. And I could go in here and basically call the turn on method, and you know. every IoT demo, I feel like nowadays ends up with, you know, light bulb turning on or off.
You feel like it's extra bright in here.
Yeah, it is. It is extra bright. So let me turn that off so it's not in your eyes. And that's, you know, that's that that translator that you're that
but
you
it's
just
going
running.
Through the translator this time.
Exactly.
Instead of going through whatever native, whatever thing it has.
Exactly. Because and that's why I use the Origin Explorer to do that turn on and off, just to show that. Because, you know, that light bulb knows nothing about AllJoin,
right.
But I just turned it on or off through the AllJoin Explorer. So I'll also show you one other thing, just show you something completely different, which is there's a different light bulb, and if, you know, hold the how many engineers jokes, please.
Yeah, okay.
And if you could screen the different light bulb.
It takes one, and it's this one right here. So while you're getting that ready, I'm going
right.
to screw this in.
So, yeah, while you do that, I'll switch over to the translator for this Flux Smart LED light bulb. Yeah, you just plug it in. It's, the outlet is hot, so please don't execute
yourself. So theoretically, like, this light bulb is a different kind of light bulb, right?
Right. It's a completely different light bulb. Mm-hmm. And what's, you know, it's not just a completely different light bulb from a different manufacturer, but it's connected not via Zigbee like that one. This one's just over Bluetooth LE. Mm-hmm. So the translator, though, which is up on screen right now, is translating to the same schema. So, so over here, what you'll notice is, you know, obviously the same on-off methods. But under the hood, what it's doing is it's doing some Bluetooth stuff.
Correct.
And this is open source. You can go look at how it's actually doing it. But what I can do, and this time I'll show this to you from the command line. Let me find what I did earlier. And then, you know, this is just a little test script, actually, that I have. Let me go into the directory for this. So again, this is a lamp, and then inside the lamps, this is the Flux Smart LED, and then, you know, just, you know, going through the
no, this is great, man. This is what programmers do, man.
Exactly.
Everyone's loving this.
So what I did previously is I found the ID of this this lamp. This is just essentially the MAC address,
mm-hmm.
and you guys can look online about how you get this.
Mm-hmm.
The UI-based console project that you saw me do the other light bulb with does all of this for you,
mm-hmm.
but now I'm showing this to you in the Node command line just to prove the point that this could be running on a Mac.
Got it.
Or it could be running in the cloud.
Love it.
But, you know, when I do this, it's the same translator, it's still cross-platform Node, but now it's, you know, turning it on. It was actually already on, but now I turned it off,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I can do it again as many times as I want, now it'll turn it on. This is just running a little test script. And again, if you view the test script is operating on the schema. So the test script is just calling turn on and off, which are the schema methods, which are getting translated under the hood, in this case, to a Bluetooth on-off command, versus earlier it was a wink turn on-off command over HTTP.
And what I like about this is effectively these could represent totally different kinds of things, but with similar functionality that you'd like to expose, and with these translators and these schemas, you'd be able to do that as sort of like an interface or broker between the functionality.
That's right. That's right. And the most important, again, is what can you do with it? You know, when you look at the schema, it had on, off, and dim the light. Well, at the end of the day, what we did is we just defined that those are the three things that the app developer is going to use. That's very powerful, both on the client for building apps, or both for the cloud when you write, for example, rule engines. Imagine you want to write something like, if the temperature in the factory is higher than X, turn off the engines. Well, those are real scenarios that are running on the cloud, and you sometimes have thousands of sensors coming from different manufacturers on the same factory
mm-hmm.
floor. Well, imagine the scale of when you start writing apps like this, where you just have to put a rule that you can reuse,
mm-hmm.
and under the cover, people can start, you know, supporting different kind of manufacturer and different kind of sensors, and it just fits, et cetera. But because the programming model is basically now coherent, it's just the schema. And that's kind of what we're trying to do, which is instead of us defining or somebody defining really in hardcore way what are the object model for different things, the architecture we are proposing is really at two layers. Some people in an open way can define what a schema is, and I always joke, like, let the best schema win.
Yeah.
How can you do that? Well, if you have more translators. So imagine you have far more translator for schema one than schema two. It means schema one, from a community point of view, is
sure.
more useful. I'm not going to define that. I don't think any, you know, it's more the usage of the schema that will make it happen, which is, you know, what I think is good engineering.
And I like the fact that the schema doesn't just have to define a thing, it can define a functionality that a thing could do. So you could use widget A to do widget B's job with a translator if you want.
Absolutely.
So this is really interesting. So to summarize,
how
can people get started with looking at this, and what are some call to actions that maybe you have for them?
I personally just want to make sure that people understand this is an alpha. You know, we started prototyping a few months ago with Taki and a few others. And so what we are really, it's very early in the project. And a lot of, we like to do that because we want to have the feedback from the community. We want the feedback both on the approach, also help us find bugs, help us finalize a lot of things. We have actually a call to action into the GitHub repo.
Got it.
So if you just go to, you know, github.com/openT2T, and you know, please participate, give us feedback, and help us make the project a reality.
Awesome. Well, you are seriously helping making sense of the whole Internet of Things scene, because it's kind of like the Wild West out there, and it needs to be tamed a little bit. And I love how you're giving choice to not only developers, and not only to manufacturers, but also it looks like the customer is going to win on this one.
No, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for spending some time with
us. Thank you, Seth.
We have learned about the Open Translator to Things. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.